Today's bonus coverage of Survivor Ghost Island Unwrapped the podcast is sponsored by our friends over at True Car. Now, if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with the term MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does that actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you really want is a price that actually means something. That's why there's True Price from True Car. Now, you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including the fees and the accessories, before you even get to the dealership. And a True Car dealer will show you the true price on a car like the one that you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car is going to show you what other people paid for the same car that you want. You're not fresh meat, and your True Car certified dealer knows this, so they can set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with some special bonus coverage as we head into the Survivor merge in just a couple of days. It happens to coincide not just with the legacy advantage, but the advantage that you get of the legacy of this great mid-season check-in that we like to do every season, and we're doing it for so many. We can't even say how many seasons it's been because it's embarrassing of how long we've been doing this exercise. Please welcome in great friend of the podcast, and of course, a man you know from ESPN.com and the author of the great books of How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, and Yes, It's Hot in Here, and also the host of the Beat My Guest podcast. Please welcome my great friend, AJ Mass. AJ, how are you?
Rob, I'm just a bleeping stick. I mean, what are you trying to do here?
No, you were a stick, and then you evolved into the Renaissance man that you are, AJ.
Oh, only took me 10 years on Ghost Island, but yes. I'm here. I'm ready to go. Yeah, this is fun. Good to talk to you again.
You were just a stick up in Syracuse, and now look at how you've blossomed.
Yes. Shout out to my fellow Orange alum, Eliza Orleans there. Yes, indeed. Yeah, we're enjoying this season.
Yeah. Yes. So, AJ, how's everything going?
Things are going good. The baseball season is underway in somewhat full swing. There's still a lot of off days here for some reason because we started actually early this year.
You know, it's very annoying, I have to be honest. And don't even get me started on that Facebook game the other day.
Well, I'm with you there. But baseball is back. Always a good thing. Survivor is back. Always a good thing. Let's hope both last well into my ripe old age, because I enjoy both very much.
Yes. No, it's a very fun time of year. But yes, again, way too many off days with this start and stop. Very hard to really feel like baseball is back. But I digress. And just a warning that I plan on doing at least 10 minutes of Mets talk with AJ Mass at the end of this podcast. So just a heads up on that. All right. So, AJ, let's just reset what this exercise is for anybody who is a new listener to the podcast. I talked about how we've been doing this for so long. I think that it was actually during Survivor South Pacific was the first season that we began doing this. And we have talked about this for Survivor and for Big Brother. I don't think we've ever done it fully for Big Brother Canada or anything like that. We're not that crazy, but AJ, what are we trying to do here when we talk about the 13 archetypes?
Well, Hamza probably would have been the mad scientist, but no, none of that. The 13 archetypes here are basically in my first book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, one of the things I postulated was that every group of people, be it a bunch of owners in a fantasy sports league, be it just a group of friends that's at large, an office, a workplace environment, tends to work best when it has a large, different number of archetypal personalities. If everybody thinks the same, things don't get done. If everybody, is on opposite sides of six on this side, six on that side, things don't get done. You need variety of viewpoints, a variety of personality types to work properly. The same goes for a reality show season. If casting has done its job, then when you get down to 13 people, you're going to find 13 people that fit these 12 archetypes. And the reason that there's one extra is because one archetype is made up of two people. We'll get to that. But basically, it tends to fit. People just take on the roles that are needed for the new society of the reality show to operate. When someone gets booted out from this point on who has one of these roles, someone else is going to step in and take over that job, you know, with people juggling many jobs until we get to the end where one person is indeed the sole survivor in this game. But it maps out pretty well. And what I've done is through watching season after season, I've kind of ranked these archetype personalities into which one is most likely to be there at final tribal with a chance to win. Doesn't mean they're going to win because this order doesn't change. The number one personality could be really bad at what they do and be the first boot after we record this episode. That's not the point here. The point
that
is,
never happens,
it's just,
does it?
Never, never, never indicate. We're going to, you know, give you just the odds of where they stand going in. We can, a 16 can and has upset a number one, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Finally say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it happens.
Okay. All right. So we're going to go through all of this and we'll hold your hand through it in case people don't know the archetypes. But okay, these are the 13 archetypes that AJ has developed, and we will go through them in the order of least likely to win the game based on the archetype and to the most likely to win the game based on the archetype. And we always start with number 13, which is, of course, fresh meat.
Yes, indeed. And let me say, this season in particular, Rob, was really, really hard. For two reasons, I want to say. The first reason is that I think casting did an amazing job. All of these, all of the people in the game this season, I thought could have fulfilled multiple roles in this list had they gotten this far. And usually you get like five fresh meats in there because, you know, it's the cattle call and people who have no idea what they're doing, have never heard of the game before. And it's really hard from that standpoint. If more than one of them makes it, you're really trying to pound them into the hole. I think everybody here who's coming up with their list in advance of this one is probably going to have a list. And I think this year's list is probably going to be most diverse from what other people are thinking because it is hard. And the second point is, we had so many obvious choices for these archetypes go out early, which is so unusual. I mean, Gonzalez was just, you know, she had that, you know, loose cannon written all over her. Jacob was a super fan. It was definitely going to be a Captain Loophole or you know,
mad
it's
scientist,
just so many people, Stephanie Johnson, Bradley, you know, they all had like, these were all like great characters who would have fit in perfectly in this list. And for some reason, these players actually know what they're doing and are voting out some of these dangerous people early.
All right, so AJ, you have to pick one. Who is fresh meat? Who is that person who is the rube that may not know what they're doing, that everybody else in the Fantasy League or Survivor is going to take advantage of and send them insane trades, hoping that they accidentally hit yes by accident?
I think in this case, for this season, it is Jenna.
Jenna Bowman.
Jenna Bowman. Yeah, I had a feeling early on when I looked at her profile, you know, she doesn't really even have anybody she compares herself to because she doesn't know this game. she really doesn't know the game. I think she's smarter than the average fresh meat. I think she's learning what's going on, but I don't think she has many opinions of her own in terms of what's going on. I haven't seen gameplay from her in what we've seen, and I don't really think she's doing this for anything more than the experience of doing it. And I haven't seen anything to change my opinion of her from that, other than she thinks it's kind of cool to be there.
She's in a relationship with Seabass, thought that maybe could be some marriage of convenience upside for her.
Oh, yeah, certainly could have been. But at the same time, I mean, she's flirting to flirt. I don't even think she
flirting
understands
to flirt.
That.
I like that. It could be a hashtag.
Flirting to flirt. Yeah, there you go. But, you know, it's not like she's parvetying it up and trying, you know, this part of our master plan of manipulation. I think she heard that you can flirt on TV shows and possibly gain an advantage. But I don't even think she understands what that means. I could be wrong. She could be a master strategist. And you know, when you eventually interview her on her farewell interview, perhaps things will be different and I will be proven wrong. But I haven't seen anything on the show that will dissuade me from this view.
Yeah, flirting to flirt, hair smells like a dead weasel. Not a great resume for Jenna Bowman so far.
Indeed, indeed.
Number 12. By the way, last season, the fresh meat was Cole. So, pretty good call there. All right. Number 12 is the ninja, AJ. The one person, when you're going through the season, you're trying to name everybody. The one person that's like, oh, I know there's one more. Who is it?
Indeed. Probably... this is the person, if for Survivor purposes, the ninja could very easily just be called the Purple Kelly. Someone who's not getting a lot of confessionals early on.
Who could that be?
Yeah, certainly not someone who's been, whose hair color is towards the purple end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. this is Purple Chelsea. Absolutely. I don't remember seeing her at all for the first month of this show. And... yes, she has gotten some play recently. I mean, especially since, well, let's face it, Navidi went to the last tribal. So, of course, we saw her. But yeah. Even in that, with so few people, I don't really have any idea where her head was at through that entire discussion.
This was her biggest episode by far. And it really does seem like, based on the exit interview with Bradley, she did not love Bradley. So she definitely was on board with this plan. So... this could be, though, maybe a coming out party, AJ, for Chelsea.
I'm not going to go so far as to say that simply because they had to show her because it was such a small tribe. And obviously they're not going to show Bradley conspiring against Bradley, although that would be the trick. If he really wanted to be the villain of all villains, he should have conspired against himself. That would have been fantastic.
Yeah, some Schmeagle and Gollum action.
Exactly. Hey, someone get on that for next season. That'll be fun. I don't know if she's still in the spotlight once they merge, then yes, maybe this was her coming out party. Otherwise, this is the we got to hear somebody say something. So,
yeah. Last season, you had Desi as the ninja again. So far, the list is pretty holding up for last season.
Yeah. Who?
Yeah. Okay. All right. That was the ninja. Okay. Number 11, you have the cheerleader, the person who is rah-rah about everybody, very excited about being a part of the tribe. Actually, last season, you had my most recent podcast guest, Jessica Johnston, who she did not go on to win the game. So you were right about that. And also, you were dead on about her being very enthusiastic. I thought she was great on the podcast. But who is this season's cheerleader?
Yeah. Now, the other aspect of the cheerleader, part of it is definitely you're always going to see them rooting for their team. Even if they sit out a challenge, they're going to be kind of vocal and there's going to be some cutaway shots of them like really cheering the team on. And also, it's kind of like what I like to call the camp mother or camp father, depending on which gender fills the role.
Yeah, Stephanie Johnson would have been a great cheerleader if she was still there.
Oh, absolutely. She had she definitely would have worn those stripes well. Mm-hmm. But I would say this year, it's Laurel.
Laurel.
I think Laurel has been very, very vocal at challenges and very... optimistic and very cheerleader worthy in that regard. But I think she's also been there to lend a sympathetic ear to her tribesmates when they're feeling down. And I, you know, certainly I've seen a lot of that with her relationship with Donathan, but just more, she's willing to sit there and listen to people complain and moan
and reveal when they're male models even.
Yes. Even if she rolls her eyes shortly thereafter for us, she'll listen to Chris and she'll listen. Yeah. Oh really? Oh wow. That is hard. Yeah. I think just being that shoulder to lean on, is also part of what the cheerleader's role is. It's someone who often gets eliminated late because they tend to be someone who is well-liked, and therefore, you know, you get to the end and it's like, I don't want them to get the votes because, you know, I've seen the relationship that the cheerleader has with everybody. So they can go far in the game, but at some point, the smart players are going to break that emotional bond and vote her out. But I like Laurel a lot. I liked her from the first episode. And definitely, I think she's got a good shot to go deep in this game if you know, the merge plays out the way it possibly could. And it's going to be tough for all the Malolos, but I think she's got a shot.
Okay, now why not Donathan as the cheerleader? Do you have him pegged as something else, or do you find him to not truly fit that archetype as being the person who's rah-rah for the tribe?
I think he's enthusiastic and rah-rah in that regard, but I think he's a lot more, certainly we saw it in this episode, a lot more wearing his disdain on his face. It's not quite Michaela level disdain on the face, but he shoots the looks. And of course, in order for you to be the cheerleader, people have to understand what you're saying.
That's right, because cheerleaders, they talk very loud and very slow, and this one they spell things out. So yeah, that nobody ever watches the cheerleaders and say, hey, what are they saying?
Exactly. In all fairness, Donathan is possibly my favorite survivor since the young lad Spencer Bledsoe. I love this guy. I don't think I've ever rooted for someone as hard as I'm rooting for Donathan. I like him immensely. But yeah, even no subtitles, sometimes I'm going, what is he saying? I wish I understood him a little better.
Okay. All right. So that's your cheerleader. Number 10, one of my favorites, is the loose cannon, the person who's very unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to say or do next. And maybe they don't either. Last season, you said it was Joe Mena. I think that was another solid call on the season 35 list. AJ, who is this season's loose cannon?
This is a battle of two people, and it's kind of what the season's been focused on thus far. And certainly I think it'll come to a head next week after the merge episode. I mean, we've seen nothing but a battle between Chris and Dominic. Certainly the two of them, irrationally probably so, just have this vendetta against each other. So it's got to be one of the two of them, because they're both kind of liable to just blow up their game in order to get the other. I would probably lean a bit more towards Chris, which is what I have done here, basically because he doesn't really have the reason. He doesn't have a reason to really be going after Dominic as hard as Dominic has to go after Chris. I just think that Chris has this bug up his ass, but is willing to like turn on a dime and just go after somebody else. If someone tells him that somebody, someone mentioned your name, this kind of like the impulse control there, I think, is just not there with him. Certainly he's a narcissist as well. That goes without saying.
Yeah. But it's like, you have a narcissist spoiler alert coming up next. I feel like that, Chris, you gotta have earmarked for that.
I did, but then, you know, when I'm putting it all together and all the pieces have to fit, I realize that generally speaking, the narcissist is not someone who's interested in strategy and voting people out and trying to build consensus and alliances. And he is. He's trying to do this. He's trying to curry favor. It's coming off to me as completely phony. And, you know, it's priceless to have someone who's that oblivious to how they're being perceived. We just lost someone with Caligi. But certainly he is just as oblivious to, like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, no one's as brilliant and smart and wonderful and beautiful as me. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Seriously, dude?
Yeah. The tricky thing, though, to have him be the loose cannon is that he still hasn't gone to a tribal council. So we actually don't know what he is going to be trying to pull off strategically. We obviously know that he has it out for Dominic, but we haven't seen any of his plans actually in action.
And I think that actually, for me, in terms of this particular breakdown, makes him even more of a loose cannon, because generally speaking, by this point, everyone has been to a tribal council. You kind of know how they're going to react under that pressure. And I really don't know how he's going to react under that pressure, which kind of makes him a loose cannon just by very definition. It's almost a tautology there. Like, I don't know how he's going to act. And he could do anything. He could just sit there dead silent the entire time, totally taking it in and being uncomfortable and not knowing what's going on. Or he could get up and throw 53 fake immunity idols at everybody. Like, I don't know what he's going to do, especially if he gets really riled up and it becomes a line in the sand. Dominic has to go tonight and people aren't with him. Like, I fear for this episode. I long for this episode. I can't wait to see this episode if they're both in play, because I think this could be the pinnacle of the season if it really is going to be head to head matchup there with the lines in the sand being drawn.
Your narcissist is not going to be Chris. So who takes that spot? Who has out-narcissized Chris?
I think it's got to be another beautiful person. It's got to be someone who is very, very into their body and how they look and working out and just kind of like, you know, more beauty than brain, certainly. It's Seabass.
Seabass, the narcissist. He's so into himself?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's into himself. I mean, he's certainly into, like, you know, potentially getting a showmance going on there. But at the same time, it's still he. Yeah, you like me. Yeah, hey, yeah, I'm great. I am great. Yeah, look at me. Aren't I wonderful? There's no low that Malolo can't low to the Lolo, yo. I mean, it's all YOLO. It's about Seabass for me, and that's kind of, I mean, I hesitate to put him anywhere else because he doesn't have any strategy. you know, he's in the fine idiot savant mold if he was doing anything, but he's really not. He's kind of being dragged along for the ride and just like, hey, it's not me. All right, whatever. Hey, yeah, you knew ya, cool ya. You know, I don't know.
Boy, Seabass, he's into candy. Is he so into himself?
He is into candy?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
You know, he strikes me as a beach person who
towel colony, you know, stony baloney.
Yeah, you know, it's like, hey, look at my catchphrase. Look at me. Look at my eyebrows. Don't I have great eyebrows? Look at my eyebrows. I have lovely eyebrows.
Does have great have eyebrows? People like keep me talking about his eyebrows.
It's hard not to notice.
I didn't notice. I didn't notice. This is the most we've talked about any Survivor's eyebrows since Jonathan Penner talked about Sierra Dawn Thomas. What's with her eyebrows? What's going on there?
I mean, you know, it's not like a topic of conversation like he's Carl Anthony Towns, the basketball player. Mm-hmm. Hey, sports reference. There you go. Fulfilled my quota there. But, you know, yeah, it's I don't know. I don't get a feel for him. And, you know, he's not Ozzy. He's not like a comp beast. He's just, hey, look at me. I'm here. Aren't I great? I just, it's to me, that's what this is about. It's about an adventure. And it's about showing off the bod, man.
Now, last season, you had the narcissist as JP and
things like that.
Yeah, nailed it, I think. You were so locked in last season.
Last year, I felt was a lot easier. I think last year, it just the right people were eliminated early, and the game kind of progressed as it went on. And I thought that's why it was such a fun season to watch. This season, I feel like it's building to a head, and I fear that it's going to be a womp 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 as we head towards the end with the not quite Sandra and Lil level womp womp or Vesepia what level, but you know, I think it could
hey,
like
what was wrong with that season. Yeah. All right, AJ, number 8 is Old Reliable. Now, I think you nailed it last season with Ben being the Old Reliable, even though he did go on to win from the number 8 slot. Who is this season's Old Reliable? The person that you know that you can count on.
Person that you know you can count on. The person that you know is going to be very competitive in the challenges. Probably isn't going to win the challenges because they're also so... You know, they're like a number 2, number 3. Like they're not like the challenge beast that's going to win everything. That's oftentimes the narcissist, simply because they're a physical specimen. But you know, just so you know where this person stands, everybody kind of wants to be in an alliance with this person because they're very trustworthy. You better vote this person out early, or else, like a certain Ben, you know, boom at the end. But this year, yes, indeed. This year, if I'm going to build a bench for Old Reliable to sit on, I'm going to want Wendell on that bench.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. Yeah. So he's a steady, calming presence. I mean, I kind of thought that you would have had Wendell pegged for the diplomat. But OK, I could see him here as the Old Reliable.
Yeah, I just think he's very much... very much in that vein of someone he's doing very well in the challenges. He's certainly not doing it to the point where people are noticing that he's a challenge beast. And I think that's he's doing a very good job at that. And yeah, how many, you know, Dominic thinks, yeah, I'm with him. Like Chris, like, yeah, I'm with him. Like pretty much everybody from the original Navidi tribe thinks, yeah, he's with me.
AJ, Now it's time. This is the tricky part. We got to get into the marriage of convenience. Marriage of convenience alpha and marriage of convenience beta. And because this is the beta, the second part of the marriage of convenience, we're going to skip this one.
Correct. We skip because oftentimes if we're talking about a couple and you hear one half of the couple, you know who the other half is. And we kind of want to keep that mystery building for a little bit longer. Although this year, I don't know if anyone's going to be, would hear this one and still be going, what are you talking about, AJ? Because this was a bit of a slot B, pounded the square into the circle. But I think it still holds up.
Okay. All right.
This is what happens when, you know, you have potential showmances that get voted out and things like that. And, you know.
Yes.
This was going to be Bradley. This was going to.
All right. Well, all right, AJ. I know that really, the Navidi should have consulted you before they voted out Bradley.
They really
this
should have. It was really a bad decision last
the whole
week,
list.
Guys.
Okay. All right. Let's go to number six. The Idiot Savant. Last season, you had none other than Dr. Mike as the Idiot Savant, and I'm sure he was not thrilled with that. AJ, what are you talking about?
You know, it's very funny how very few people who listen to this, who are on the show, are thrilled with what I come up with. I know Snowy is still mad at me for calling him old reliable back in the day. Mm-hmm. I wasn't old! I'm like, but nevertheless, that's not the point. It's just a phrase. Yeah, so the Idiot Savant is someone who is still in the game, and I don't know why. Strategy is working, but really shouldn't be. If you could even call what they're doing a strategy, it's just like the decisions that this person is making, they're playing a game that doesn't really make sense, and yet somehow they're getting away with a whole bunch of mistakes.
AJ, I won 10 challenges before the merge.
Yeah, yes, you did. You came out way too hot, my friend. Way too hot. But this year, again, I wish we had a stronger Idiot Savant. I'm going to come right out there and say it. However, I would say that Libby is the Idiot Savant.
Libby?
Yes, I would say Libby is the Idiot Savant. She seems to have this strategy of you know, don't trust the blonde girl, and I'm going to use my faith to kind of create this aura of being a sweetheart, and yet I'm going to turn around and stab you in the back. And yet everybody has seen this. It became kind of front and center of this, and everyone's kind of like now the I don't trust Libby because she made a move early in the game. Perhaps she was duped into it, but she made a move early in the game that she probably shouldn't have, because you can't fly under the radar when you make a big move like week two, week three. It just doesn't work. And I think she still thinks that she's under the radar, but she's not. People are all waiting to get her out at this point. They don't trust her. And I think that kind of makes her the Idiot Savant, because she came up with a strategy and she's completely gone against the strategy, and yet she's still here. She didn't pay for it yet, and I think she will, because I think she's going to remind people of the big move she made at some point.
AJ, before I post this podcast, I'm going to put out a Warren Buffett challenge to the listeners of Robert's podcast. If they can successfully guess 13 out of 13 of where you're going with the archetypes this season, then I will give them $1 million. I don't think there's a chance in hell anybody is matching your list.
I told you when we started this podcast that this was the most difficult I have ever done. I sat here after Bradley was eliminated and tried so hard. I had to switch up so many people because it changed. His elimination really changed the balance of the game. And I think that just goes to why so many people are
this list,
appalled
this
at that decision.
It's not making sense. Yes. That's why it was a bad decision.
It was the wrong decision.
Yeah. So do you feel like when the list is harder to come up with, is that the earmark of a good season or a bad season? It sounds like from what you're saying that you feel like it's a season on the brink.
I do. I do. Because I think you get too many people with the same mindset, the same groupthink, and you get pogongings as a result of this, or you get like really strong personality taking over the game and kind of dictating, a Boston Rob type season where it's like he kind of takes over the game and just tells everybody what to do. I think you're in danger of that Sometimes that's the fault of casting. I don't think this is the case. I think this season had the perfect cast for this. I think this is the result of really strange decisions to vote people out that we've seen thus far, combined with the Ghost Island thing kind of screwing things up, because it kind of changed the order of who got voted out a little bit there. And I think the combination of the two has put this season in danger of becoming a really uninteresting denouement to the season. I think right now it's still really good.
Do you think, AJ, that we are at the precipice of one person just completely taking over and dominating the game in the post-merge?
I do. Okay. And I think it's going to be a battle between Chris and Dominic, certainly. I think it's the fact that we are this far into the season, there's no obvious merge boot right now, because it's become this who's with me versus who's with me. And it really should be there should have been a pagonging of the original Malolo at this point and deal with the rest later. But now that Bradley's out, it's become Dominic versus Chris, and that's got to be settled early, because those two personalities are just so strong. I don't think anyone else is going to be able to like take over the game until they're both gone. And without one of them in the mix to kind of balance the scales, I think whoever's left standing could easily run the table. I really do think that. I think we've seen that there's not a lot of strong players on the dissenting end of a lot of these arguments here. I hope I'm wrong, because I would love to see Laurel and Donathan kind of pull people together and kind of like take over from below, and I'll be rooting for that. I just don't think it's possible at the present time.
Okay, AJ.
Captain Loophole, last season you said it was Ryan Ulrich. Now, this season, we have a new Captain Loophole, the person who knows all of the angles, that they know what you can or can't do, always pushing the boundaries. Who is this season's Captain Loophole?
This season's Captain Loophole, he's a young lad, younger than even they think he is on the show. This is Jurger. This is Michael Jurger. Easily Jurger. The move that he...
See, I thought he could have been X-Factor.
Could have been. Absolutely could have been X-Factor. But the move that he pulled off, or almost pulled off, just the strategy to claim that the James Idol was actually worth covering two people. If he had picked correctly and actually handed it to the right person, he could have run this game from that moment on. And it was based on his knowledge of the game, his understanding of the rules, and he's shown a really firm grasp of how this game is played and all the intricacies of it. I just think he is the super fan of all super fans this season. It would have been interesting to see what would have happened.
The super fan of all super fans, Michael Jurger. Wow.
Of this season, yeah. I think certainly we know it would have been Jacob, obviously, if he had stayed, but he was booted very early. It would have been interesting to see the two of them align and what happens when two super fans kind of get together and kind of run the show. That would have been a lot of fun to see. I was kind of pulling for that to happen. It did not. But I just think Michael understands how this game is played. He's not playing with any emotion whatsoever. He's willing to do whatever it takes to survive until the merge. And at this point, he's also very interestingly physical enough where he can actually do what a lot of Captain Loopholes can't do, and that is go on a challenge immunity run here, which it makes him very intriguing and probably one of the more unique casting decisions they've ever had on this show. I don't think we've seen this type before, someone who combines the youth, the youthfulness, the strength, the ability to kind of interact with people and get them to like him, combined with the knowledge of the game. He's fascinating. I think he's well worth the reach for an 18-year-old. This isn't like some of the other youngsters who've been on the show who you kind of thought, maybe in a few years, give him a try. I think he's fully cooked here.
Do you think that this will mark a new era in Survivor where players will skip the college game, AJ, and you think that we will see an influx of players coming right from high school, like a LeBron, like a Kobe Bryant, and coming right into Survivor from high school?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to definitely get together with the endurance host and make sure that we firm the rules up there a little bit so that they have to spend some time playing with the secret samadhi there before they get to move over to Survivor in general. Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
I know of what you're speaking of. I think that players, they need to go to school for 1 year. I think that that should be the rule.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But yeah, I think there's always a danger when you cast someone this young. There was no danger here. He's done more than a good job of fulfilling that. Yeah, well done. Well done, Michael. I like Michael. I didn't think I was going to like Michael, and I do, but it's because he's been an underdog the whole time. And it'll be interesting to see once the merge hits if he suddenly starts to perform to the point where people are like, you know, he has to be next. So he's a potential merge boot. Which has nothing to do with his tribal alliance, just because if he finishes second in that immunity challenge, maybe people will get wise to, you know, let's get rid of him first and let's get rid of this, settle the Chris Dominic thing later.
Yeah, he's been off the charts likable. I think that I like to track the overall Survivor Q rating. I think he's polling pretty close to 100%, Michael.
Yeah.
Hard to find a detractor other than Bradley.
It's earned.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
So now we get to the X factor, the one person that isn't the same as everybody else. Last season, you said it was Lauren. For the life of me, I can't remember why. The one person who isn't like everybody else in the group, AJ, who is this season's X factor?
Yeah, well, now sometimes the X factor is because of the timing when we do this. Sometimes the X factor is someone who has just never been to tribal council. That certainly sometimes plays into it. Sometimes it's somebody who is the only person who's been on everybody's tribe with all the mixing. And so sometimes this has nothing to do with personality traits or anything. It's just someone whose experience in the game has been much different than everybody else. That's partially the case here. It can be a personality trait, sort of if, you know, for some reason that all the women were voted out first and there's only like two women left. Well, that makes them certainly more of an X factor than anything else, or, you know, vice versa. This year, the X factor is the oldest remaining person in the game, the only one over 40.
Mm-hmm.
The only person who has basically been burned by their own alliance to the point where they're willing to now side with the other alliance, you know, lean towards going that way. And that is Angela.
Yeah, no, I could see this one. I mean, that she is sort of the one person who, you know, it's a very young cast and she doesn't seem to get along with too many other people great in the game. So, yeah, I could see her as the one person that's different than everybody else. That's, you know, in the same way I thought it could be Michael. She's like the opposite end of this, where she's the oldest person that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, age certainly is something that plays a part of Survivor. It has always played a part in terms of the young people versus the old people in terms of making those connections. And so in a season like this, where you do have these two huge extremes with, you know, an 18-year-old and a 40-year-old, it's going to play in potentially to the relationships here. And I think for her, she's especially, and also, if you throw in her military background, I think she's having a difficult time connecting with the people who are left on the island.
Okay, down to the top three, and then we'll go and get that other person from the Marriage of Convenience. Number three is the mad scientist, the person that's coming up with all sorts of crazy ideas. AJ, who is this season's mad scientist?
Mad scientist is yeah, like you said, you know, these are the Tony Vlachoses of the world. These are the ones who are just going to plot and plan and switch sides when there's no real reason to, but potentially just tell everyone they have a fake idol when they have a real idol, and then maybe, you know, show someone a fake idol that they just made up for no apparent reason. Switch on a dime and say, yeah, we have the majority, but I'm going to go vote that person out. It's clearly Dominic. Dominic has been plotting and planning from moment one.
That'll work.
Prototypical, prototypical mad scientist.
You could have a mad scientist. You could have him as the loose cannon. But okay, mad scientist is here. He's the guy with a real idol, but he's going to show people he's got the fake idol. Got the real legacy advantage. He hasn't shown a fake legacy advantage yet. what do you think that the mad scientist's upside is? You think that he's potentially getting ready to run the game, AJ?
I think in this particular breakdown of personalities, I think he very well could. He was, you know, a finalist for Loose Cannon as well, like you said. And I think what steered me away from him as Loose Cannon was really the way he handled the whole Bradley incident, where, you know, Bradley is yelling at him in terms of, you know, hey, maybe you shouldn't drink so much coffee and everything. And he did kind of chill. He didn't fly off the handle. If he had like made a big deal about that and you know, really caused a scene, then okay, he's Loose Cannon. You know how to press his buttons. You can play that. But he didn't. He held it back. Maybe he threw the challenge. Maybe he didn't. But certainly he took his revenge, you know, at Tribal Council with the vote. And that shows a level of control that Loose Cannon probably doesn't have. So that's why he's not there. I think if Dominic can survive this week, and somehow that means he has the majority, and I think he can convince the majority to just pick off whoever was on Chris's side. And at that point, if he still has a couple of, an idol, you know, or some other advantage that he finds, you know, they send him to Ghost Island, he finds something else. I think he could use his ability to control the game from this point on and take it all the way to the end. I don't know if he can win the final tribal. If he picks the wrong people to go with him, that's always going to be the crapshoot at that point. But I think making final tribal, I hope he can make fire.
AJ, let's get back to that marriage of convenience. Okay, now let's talk about the marriage of convenience alpha, and by proxy, we'll talk about the marriage of convenience beta. Last season, you were pretty early on arriving at the marriage of convenience between Devin and Ashley, which was a solid call. I don't think that people really thought that or weren't as onto it as you were. They ended up being pretty tight allies until Devin ended up betraying Ashley to go with Ryan and Chrissy to try to get a final three going with them. And Ashley was very burned when Devin left their marriage of convenience. But now who is this season's marriage of convenience?
Right. And like, the marriage of convenience is usually one of two things. Sometimes it is a showmance or some sort of power couple that emerges early on. Sometimes it is a very obvious bromance that kind of builds early and kind of these two guys running the game, something like that. Unfortunately, we haven't seen too many examples of a, whatever the female version of a bromance is in terms of, because I don't know that we have a term for it because we haven't seen it too often. I think the only season that we really did see something like that was Kim Sprodlin. So when she kind of had Chelsea and Sabrina and her minions there, I think she kind of was so good at that and probably the only one of those we've had. This year, the marriage of convenience simply comes because there's so many merges and swaps and things like so many tribe movements. There is only one group of Navidi Strong that went Navidi Malolo Malolo. So these two have been together the entire game. They have been on the same side the entire game. And as such, their bond is stronger than anybody else's in this game. And they've been working together. And I think they will continue to do so now as a result of happenstance, especially now that Bradley's been booted. And that is the alliance of Kellen and Dez. I think the two of them are definitely working together. I don't see them as being best buds. We haven't seen a lot of them working together, but clearly they've been together since day one, and therefore their relationship is going to be as strong as anybody else's in this game simply by circumstance. And that's kind of what a marriage convenience can sometimes spring out of, you know, kind of the Matt Singh of it all.
Okay. And so just to be clear, so you have Kellen as the alpha, Desiree is the
absolutely
beta.
She's definitely the alpha. I think listening to Bradley's interview with you and reading some of his exit statements, I think he came up with a strategy and Kellen together, they came up with a strategy which I think would be the most brilliant strategy to use on Big Brother. which is you get a twosome and you kind of then separate and each of you get one or two more so that you two are kind of controlling the conversation and making other people think that they're in the majority when really you two are pulling the strings. I call it the cabal strategy, and I haven't seen it used yet on Big Brother. The closest thing to it was actually in Big Brother Canada first season with the Shield, and they botched it, but it was a good strategy to use.
I feel like the Brigade kind of had that going on in Big Brother 12.
The problem was there were too many cooks at the top. And that was the problem there. And yeah, the Brigade were very successful. The house didn't succumb to it. But again, it works in Big Brother because there aren't tribal swaps, and you're not sent somewhere where suddenly, you know, you're away from the people you've kind of like built this alliance with. Once you have these tribal swaps, you need to be able to reach out to the other people, and they don't hold these alliances because you can't be together the whole time. But I think that Kellen was more of a mastermind of everything that was going on in Navidi than we've seen. I think that Dez is more of a follower in that regard. So I think Kellen is probably the alpha here.
Do you mean at the original Navidi or when they swapped to Malolo?
At the original Navidi, I think Kellen was probably at the top of the pecking order. And I don't think it was shown that way, but just based on what I've heard from the exit interviews and kind of like, you know, how she's always the one who gets sent to Ghost Island and seeing her smart decision. I thought it was very smart the first time to not give up the vote to play the game. We can discuss how bad Ghost Island has been in practice, but in theory, I like Ghost Island. So I think she's really smart, and I think she's really gained the respect of her original Navidi players. And certainly Dez has been with her this whole way, and I think will continue to be listening to her and following her for the rest of the game.
So now, AJ, there's only one spot left. It's for the diplomat. And you said how much you like this person and you were not blowing smoke. Tell us about your diplomat, Donathan.
Donathan is the diplomat. And again, that doesn't mean he's going to win the game. That's not what I'm saying here. However, Donathan, he has shown consistently from day one that he is likable and well-liked, even by people who are not on his side. I think the fact that he was able to have Chris come over to him and kind of like form a bond with Chris, and also Dominic go over to him and form a bond with him. And the fact that he's now kind of like pulled himself into almost an alliance with the Navidis that they're on his tribe. He's been doing that the whole game. The Malolos liked him. The Navidis liked him, even from a distance, they liked him. And as soon as they got on the tribe, like, oh, let me talk to Donathan. He's got that innate ability to get people to let him in, and that's what a diplomat is. It doesn't mean, you know, you could be a really bad diplomat and you know, be able to be the middleman between the two sides and suddenly get voted out in 2 seconds because, you know, you're seen as being distrustful. I think he's got that rare ability to do that, and yet, oh, it's just Donathan being Donathan. He's still with us. I think that's a gift of his personality. I think the stereotype of him being, you know, a hick who don't know nothing, I think that certainly helps him because I think people are overlooking his intelligence as well. Or perhaps they just don't understand what he's saying and just say, well, I don't understand what he's saying. He must be an idiot. I think I've seen him tweet a lot about that he feels that's kind of how a lot of people are perceiving him. But I think in general, he's definitely got that ability to reach across the aisle, as it were, and at least find out what's going on the other side. And that's very valuable. You still have to know what to do with it. And diplomats are often voted out because they are seen as being disloyal. You have to avoid that pitfall. And I think he can for some time. I don't think he's the type of diplomat who can broker a deal that suddenly changes the game that a lot of diplomats are able to do. So in that sense, I don't necessarily think that he's going to win. But, you know, he's definitely someone who can go to the final five and then let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. Now, AJ, you said that just because somebody is the diplomat does not mean that they're automatically going to win the game. And that was evidenced extremely well again last season when Allie was the diplomat and I think probably got voted off the next episode after we did the 13 archetypes.
Right. It happens. It happens. And again, a part of it is just how well the person is doing in the role and what, you know, who's in charge. You know, you can be a really strong, impulsive, you know, player and do something that's out of character for your role. You know, you have to know how to do the job and you also have to know how to kind of hide the fact that you're doing that job. And, you know, some people just don't do it right. That's the point of the game. Like, if we knew who was going to win every year, then we just, you know, pick whoever is the first one to smile at the other team and like they're the winner. You know, it's a lot more going on than that. And then, of course, you also get the twisty twists that go on at Ghost Island. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So the twists are out there, AJ, as were many twists and turns in this season's 13 archetypes. All right, AJ, just to recap before we get to our draft, the list this season was what?
Fresh meat was Jenna. The ninja was Purple Chelsea. The cheerleader was Laurel. The loose cannon was Chris. The narcissist was Seabass Man. Lolo. Old Reliable is Wendell. Marriage of Convenience Beta is Desiree. Idiot Savant is Libby. Captain Loophole is Michael. X Factor Angela. Mad Scientist Dominic. Marriage of Convenience Alpha is Kellen. And the diplomat is Donathan.
Okay. All right. Now, AJ, turning to the draft, I don't have the exact scoring in front of me, but I have the draft results and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think that I may have won last season's draft.
I will be willing to take you at your word and concede if I remembered what we drafted.
Yes. So basically, the draft went down like this, that you took Ryan with the first pick overall. And then I took Chrissy and Ben at the 2-3 turn. And I think that based on the scoring system, which awards 3 points for each vote received at Final Tribal Council, I think that that's probably a ball game right there.
Yeah, I would say so. I am willing to concede, certainly.
Yes. And you went Devin Alley. So we did it. We did nail the final four there with the first four picks last season.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. I think, you know, we tend to pick in groupings of people we think are working together and kind of it tends to tip the scales one way or the other.
Right. Better than in Game Changers when I think Sarah Lucina went undrafted. So, okay. All right. So here we are. We did better last season. Okay. So here we are now, AJ, at the point where we're going to draft two teams of six. Okay. Just to reset the scoring system. 1 point making it through Tribal Council without getting voted out. 2 points when you win immunity. 2 points for playing the hidden immunity idol. 3 points for making the final Tribal Council. And 3 points received for each vote that a player gets at the final Tribal Council. And so, AJ, once again, you have the number one pick overall.
Well, can we also add this season 5 points for the person who goes to Ghost Island, decides to play the game, and doesn't get the advantage?
If you would like, we can add that, but it's a little
Let's
random.
Let's do that, because they're making it almost impossible for you. I'm not even convinced that there isn't something in all three of those.
I'd be surprised if we ever see that. I said that the other night, but we'll see. AJ, you're a real Cleveland Browns right now with the number one and number four pick ready to go.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to trade it to the Giants for number two. Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm going to kick things off here. And look, I've been talking about how much I think that this person is playing a great game and has the ability to both woo people onto his side and as well as win challenges. So I'm just going to kick things off and I'm going to pick Michael for the physicality of it. And we'll start with that.
Okay. All right. Michael goes off the board to AJ. For me right now, I feel like that there are two players who are sort of jockeying back and forth for this, really have been the focus of a lot of what we've seen. And I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but I'm going to stick with my winner pick at number two overall and give me Kellen, who was your marriage of convenience, mm-hmm. A. And then I am also going to take Wendell here. That, I mean, he's had such a nice story so far. And so he's got now the Eric Reichenbach necklace. I think that he will probably use it better than Eric did. And so I will go with Kellen and I will go with Wendell at the 2-3 turn.
Okay, very good. I don't want to know where he's going to hide it when he brings it to tribal, though, because
I don't know if he can.
yeah, exactly. Can I bring half of it? does it still have power? I'll leave the other half on Ghost Island so it can germinate for another 10 years. Yeah, all right. So I get the next two picks. Well, I mean, Dominic has an idol, so I think he's safe this week one way or the other. So I'm going to pick Dominic, especially since I said there's a good chance that he could just run the table. So good why pick. Not put my money where my mouth is there? And then, like, you know, hey, I like Donathan a lot. I'm going to be rooting for him. Let's pick him as well.
Okay. All right. Now this is where things get trickier. Okay. So now I will need to pick 6 and 7 and... Who are the people that left that I think still have potential winner upside? I feel like that Laurel has been strong. I like her. I want to get her on my team. And then of the people left, I feel like that there's less and less of people who have that kind of upside. I guess, boy... I feel like that, I guess give me, boy.
It's tough.
yeah. I guess I have to tell myself a story here that I guess there's a non-zero chance, right, that Chris could be the person who comes out on top of the Chris versus Dominic, but... I guess give me Chris. I feel like that we're top heavy here with these top six picks versus the bottom six picks in our draft.
Yeah, hence the potential for a pagonging here. Absolutely. It could easily work out that way. Yeah, okay. Very good. So I get the next two picks.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, well, I was eyeballing Laurel there myself. I think that's a really good value pick where you took her.
I feel like there's a big drop off here. Between the top six and the bottom seven.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So I will go. I'll go Seabass.
Okay.
He's kind of just flaky and non-threatening enough that he might go a little bit of the way. And I will go with. I want to go with Jenna.
Okay. Taking the couple.
Yeah.
Seabass Jen.
Yeah. Protect her a little bit.
Okay. All right. Then for me, I will take Desiree at pick number 10. And then I will pair her with Chelsea. Okay.
Okay.
So you have now at number 12, Libby and Angela.
Libby and Angela. I just think...
That's your choice. Yeah, then one will go undrafted.
I think just Angela. Yeah, Angela just has, I think, really just set herself apart from Navidi too much to get back in there. And I don't know that the original Malolos will embrace her either. I'll take Libby.
Okay. Take Libby at 12. And Angela is off to Ghost. Is she going to play
Indeed.
The game or no?
Oh, she's going to play the game.
Yeah.
She's going to play the game, and she's going to pick up all three or four tubes and smash them on the ground to see what's there and say, I picked that one.
All right. So just to reset the draft, Team AJ is Michael, Dominic, Donathan, Seabass, Jenna, and Libby. Team Rob is Kellen, Wendell, Laurel, Chris, Desiree, and Chelsea. And poor Angela, again, Nobody wanted her. She's off on Ghost Island by herself. And that is where she will be for the season 36 draft. And then we will figure it out once again, I guess maybe when we talk about Big Brother, or probably more likely when we talk about season 37 in the fall, AJ.
Yeah, season 37. What's that going to be? Terror Tribal or something?
Yeah. All right. AJ. Man. All right. So, of course, that is the Survivor draft. Of course, you can feel free to comment to about it all season long with us at AJ Mass on Twitter. I'm at Rob Sestrino. Okay. AJ, do you have a couple minutes? Can we talk about the Mets?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, you promised 10 minutes, so I don't know if we're going to have that much to say. It's early,
but sure. I could do 30 easy, standing on my head. Okay, so the part where we talk about Survivor, this podcast is over, so there's no need. If you don't want to hear about the Mets, you can turn off the podcast. We'll be back with the feedback show with Aubrey Bracco coming up later on this weekend, so be on the lookout for that. And, of course, be sure to check out everything AJ Mass is doing on ESPN at AJ Mass, and be sure to check out the Beat My Guest podcast. All right, AJ, I'm so excited about the Mets right now, who are off today, off to a 5-1 start. I love Mickey Callaway. That I feel like that we have like the Negan of managers. I'm very excited. And I haven't been this pumped up for a Mets manager in 20 years, AJ.
Ah, the Negan of managers. He's dangerous because there's a lot of baseball bats lying around for him to use. yeah, I think... certainly knowing that Terry Collins, he was a good manager. He did a lot with very little. And I think he doesn't get enough credit for what he did during the time he was there. But yeah, someone like Terry Collins, at some point, you hear the same message over and over again. You do need to make a change. I thought it was time. And I think picking someone who has a background in pitching and handling pitching staffs, I think was very, very smart. I, too, am very optimistic on how he's going to handle the pitching staff, which is really what is going to make or break this team. If they stay healthy, if Thor can stay healthy, if Jacob can stay healthy, if Harvey can stay healthy, then this team could win 90 games. And that's a playoff spot. If one of them goes down, we'll be okay. If two of them go down, now we're going to be struggling to reach 500. So it's very, very, very early. But so far, I like the way he's using the pitchers, and I like the way that they seem to be responding to his management style.
Yeah. Can I say that I feel like that the Mets underperformed under Terry Collins? Is that a hot take?
I think it's a hot take only because of the sheer number of injuries. You cannot have... Look, they made the World Series. Okay, so that's you can't do better than that. Winning the World Series,
you could do better than that. There's one step higher than making it to the World Series that you could do better.
I think with the team that they had that year, making the World Series was probably as good as you can get. If Murphy doesn't get hot, they don't make the World Series. So that was fortunate. But I think they outkicked their coverage on that one. And yet they were still in it. They could have won that World Series. And it often is just, luck of, one play going your way, one play not going your way, one ball hit the first base where he doesn't throw it to home plate in time. It could have gone a lot differently. But having said that, I think when you have as many pitching injuries as they had last year, that they were dead man walking. I believe I tweeted something probably three games into the season last year, and I don't remember exactly what it was that inspired me to tweet it, but three games into last season, I said, this is going to be a very, very long season. Mm-hmm. I just knew. I could tell in three games that that team did not have it. And unfortunately, I was right. But I think that this year, they have a nice mix of young and old. I think they have a much more positive attitude in the clubhouse. Jake does not apparently suffer from Samson syndrome. He can cut his hair and still pitch well. Mm-hmm. That was good to see. I just think this is a nice mix of young and old. I think Todd Frazier is a great clubhouse guy. If David Wright can't be healthy enough to play, he was a great pickup. I was really excited to see him come over. Cespedes has to stay healthy.
Yeah.
I don't care if Adrian Gonzalez, doesn't perform well. I mean, he's a nice veteran stabilizer early. If he somehow gets hurt, I think we have enough people to move around to kind of fill that hole. So I'm not as concerned with his age. But, you know, getting Bruce back, who clearly wanted to be here, Frazier, Cabrera, it's just a strong veteran base. And the young kids are going to do well. I think Conforto is doing well. I'm a little concerned about our catcher situation simply because I don't think Darno is a very good defensive catcher. And if he's not hitting as well, I wish we still had Rivera around because I thought he was great with the pitching staff. And I don't think Plawicki is that different from Darno. So that might come back to bite us at some point. But generally speaking, I'm optimistic. Okay. Yeah, they certainly could not have started better.
Let's talk about something important, AJ. The salt and pepper celebration. Okay. What do you take about this? For anybody who is the uninitiated, the Mets are doing a thing now where when they sort of like somebody gets a big hit, they are doing some sort of charade that's like if you were in a restaurant and somebody is like, if you were trying to signal the waiter, can I get some fresh pepper on this pasta? That's the celebration the Mets are doing. Are you in or out on the salt and pepper?
The idea is that
this was a Todd Frazier inspired celebration that they're sprinkling or the offense around.
Sure. And he didn't want to do the thumbs down that he had created when the Yankee fan kind of gave him the thumbs, you know, when the fan at Yankee Stadium kind of thumbs down to him.
Yes,
or whatever that was.
I love that. I love that.
You know, it's great to have a team celebration. I don't really care what it is. The fact that they have a celebration also, I think, speaks to the chemistry of the team. You know, day one, they have the celebration in place, and that is always a positive sign. If, you know, you have a clubhouse that and a dugout that is at each other's throats or just seems indifferent, that goes a long way towards not inspiring success when the games start to matter. The fact that they're having fun early on with this, it's a stupid celebration. It doesn't go in the pantheon of great celebrations. It's no rally cap or you know, with Roger McDowell hot foots or anything like that. But they're enjoying it. It's something. As long as you have something, I think that's an important thing to do.
Yeah, I think I'm out on salt and pepper, AJ. I don't like it. That I feel like it took me a while to even know what they were doing. I think a lot of people are going to get the wrong idea of what they're trying to signal. I think they're sending out the wrong message.
Yeah, I mean, you know, could very, very easily be interpreted as something like, you know, choking the goat or something like that.
Getting a third base. Yeah, I don't like it. I think we need to go back to the drawing board on this one.
Well, look, and it'll probably, you know, if they continue to win, it'll probably only grow and parts will be added to it. It'll grow. It'll evolve. It'll suddenly gain full immunity powers or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So, all right. So anyway, I'm very excited about the Mets. Mets are 5-1 right now. What do you want to predict the Mets record? What do you think? We're looking at like what? 130-32?
91-71 in the wild card.
Okay. All right. Very exciting. You're keeping up with Walking Dead, AJ?
Of course. I'm all caught up on Fear. Looking forward to perhaps a drunken recap of Fear the Walking Dead. That'll be fun.
Yes. Potentially Beer the Walking Dead maybe coming to post-show recaps.
I listen.
Yes. So I'm very impressed. Yeah, so thumbs up or thumbs down on where we are with the Walking Dead right now? You're still on track?
Yeah, overall thumbs up. I mean, this they're always going to do certain episodes or certain stretches and storylines that like take 8 episodes where I wish they would only take 5 or 4 to do. You know, the best show on TV right now, quite frankly, is The Magicians, which every single episode could be a season finale. And it's that level of plot advancement and excitement going on.
I don't even know what The Magicians is.
Sci-fi. It's based on a trilogy of books by Lev Grossman. It's just finished its third season this week. Find it on your streaming service of choice. It is well worth it. It's best show in terms of plot development that's out there. If Walking Dead followed the speed and innovation of plot that the Magicians had, you it would be an unstoppable force based on its, you know, fan base to begin with. Instead of taking 15 episodes to, you know, travel three blocks to the other house, like which they tend to do. I don't mind, you know, I didn't mind the season, you know, after Terminus, you know, to get into Terminus where they, you know, separated after the prison and you know, we followed their individual stories. I thought that was important for character development at that point. You know, now it's just kind of like, all right, Negan either has to die and we have to end this war and see what happens next, whatever that is, or, you know, we have to kill off Rick. One of the two has to
maybe
happen.
Maybe Donathan can be the diplomat and bring them to the same table.
Maybe. I mean, I know we're losing Morgan. But, when he went to the table with the governor, I mean, that didn't result in anything except a really, really fun lip dub on YouTube. So,
yeah.
But dippity-dippy-dum.
Yeah.
I just think that they spent too much time delaying things, and that's what's so frustrating. I wish it would just get there. I actually do find the audacity of killing all the garbage people was great. I thought that was fun. It's like, you know, it's almost like the show admitting, this was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
You know, that's fun. But, and to keep Jadis, I think Jadis, you know, the intrigue that suddenly came up when she started talking regular English was like, okay, now she's interesting. Do things that make the characters interesting. And I don't care so much about the story, but when you focus so much on the story, it bothers me that you don't get there.
Okay. AJ Mass at AJ Mass on Twitter, of course, host of Beat My Guest and also the Hamster Factor with the great Mike Bloom.
Indeed. We have new podcasts every other week where we talk about movies that are perhaps cult classics or are slightly older than Mike himself in many mm-hmm. cases. And, you know, we kind of do a Gen X millennials kind of what do you think?
I love that. Everybody knows I love that.
Absolutely. So it's just fun time. We've done some really interesting movies over the past, and we're heading into our next episode will be Terry Gilliam's classic dystopian future Brazil. So certainly that's going to be fun. Mike's never seen that one either, and it'll be interesting to hear his take on it. It's one of my favorites. So.
Okay, check that out. Of course, you can also check out AJ's books available on Amazon, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, which was the genesis of the 13 Archetypes podcast. Plus, Yes, It's Hot in Here. The links to both of those are available on our Amazon store page. When you go to amazon.com/shop/RHAP, there's a link right on the homepage from robhasawebsite.com. All right, AJ. So we'll get back together in the summer. We'll talk about Big Brother 20.
Absolutely. I am I'm looking forward to it.
You're going to have Paul as the diplomat this season? Oh,
goodness gracious. pissed if he comes back at all.
Oh!
Yeah. I like the Big Brother. I think they could take a lot of lessons from Big Brother Canada in terms of how to kick off a season, because mm-hmm. I thought the Big Brother Canada 6 kickoff episode was absolutely...
I thought their season, I could have tweaked it a little bit how they kicked it off.
I thought the kickoff was great. I thought episode 2, they immediately jumped the shark.
Yeah.
But the kickoff was fantastic. Once they, you know, had the vote into the house, we all know how that went, and we all know how ridiculous that idea was.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know that the Angels were getting in there. So,
yeah,
they did nothing. But I do think that if the show can have as much of the fun that they had with the Celebrity Big Brother and realize that just let the show do itself, go back to the traditional challenges, don't try so hard to put twists into it. But you know, they're going to interfere and
sure.
There's going to be some sort of what the house doesn't know is that there's 12 other house guests in a secret underground house.
Now that would be good. People would like that.
Online only. And like, it gets too crazy at that point. But,
yeah.
You know, they'll come up with something that I'll have problems with. But I still will watch. They have me hooked.
Okay. AJ, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to catch up with you and look forward to Big Brother 20.
Okay, stop right there! No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
You're pro Wandoff? You're Wandoff pro?
I am for a wand off. Yes. I am. If I had the ability, I'd submit something. But
yes. Thumbs up or Todd Frazier on the Wiggler's Wombat's hat?
Yeah. I told him it should have been the Wiggler's Wandat.
Yeah, well, I think so, the hats were already made. I think the hats predate Wanda.
I know, but it was such a brand opportunity.
All right, maybe next season. All right,
AJ. Wand bats.
Okay, AJ, thank you so much. Okay.
All right, Rob, take care.
All right, take care, buddy. Bye.
All right, there you have it. AJ Mass back here on the podcast. Busy podcast weekend here with the Extra Show. Got my patron Facebook Friday coming up later on this evening, where I'll be chatting with the patrons of Robin's podcast in our Facebook group. And then I turn that into a podcast in the patron podcast feed. And then on Saturday, I'm going to be talking with Aubrey Bracco, and we'll get that up for you guys by Sunday night. Ready to go. And of course, the Wiggle Room coming up for you guys on Monday before we do it all over again coming up next week when we get to the Survivor merge. So lots of great stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed the bonus coverage here today. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.